This morning's presentation is entitled Embracing Midlife Challenges Through the Lessons of Michelet. I'm going to ask you, let us define the word Michelet. Now, if you look up any book that has been a translation of this word, or a work that has translated this work of Shlomo HaMelech, you'll find every time it's translated as Proverbs. The word proverb, in a good Webster English dictionary, means a saying of wisdom. But that's only part of what Michelet is. It's way beyond that. And we have a trap. Whenever we study Torah in the vernacular, in another language other than Lashon HaKodesh, we fall into the danger almost every time of borrowing from the Christian translation of the Bible and using the vocabulary available to us in our language to translate a Hebrew term. But it's the wrong way around. Because what we really have to do is look at the terminology in the original Lashon HaKodesh, understand what it means, and then find the correct language, even if it's more than one word, that clearly reflects the intent of the Lashon HaKodesh, the original wording. So if you look carefully at the word Michelet, we know it comes from the word Mashal. Mashal means a metaphor, parable. What is a Mashal? A Mashal, if you look at the letters, Mem, Shin, Lamed. Mem, Shin, Lamed. Mem is a prefix, which means from. Shel is construct, means of. You're taking information from one place and you're attaching it to another place. Listen carefully. The power of a metaphor, a parable, is that you take information which you already know and you transfer it into an area which is unclear or unknown and it becomes understood. It's a transference of understanding. Shlomo HaMelech has said over 3,000 mashalim, 3,000 metaphors on every verse in the Torah. And according to Rashi, we'll quote soon, on each one of the 3,000 mashalim, metaphors for each verse, he gave 1,005 ta'amim, reasons, explanations. There was not a single person, no matter how brilliant or how shallow, that would sit in the audience of Shlomo HaMelech, who Shlomo HaMelech could not reach, because he had such an arsenal of metaphors that even, I'll give you a ridiculous example. Imagine a car mechanic would come to Shlomo HaMelech. Shlomo HaMelech would say, let's figure out what you do understand, and from that, I will use that as a metaphor for something you don't understand. So, a car mechanic would relate, perhaps, to the parts of the body or parts of the universe because he's used to working with parts. Shlomo HaMelech had at his disposal thousands of ways of looking at the experiences that people have on a daily basis and turn that into a reflection of something they don't understand. How powerful is a mashal? How powerful is a metaphor? Think for a moment. What a mashal does when it transfers information that we already have and gives us a new understanding of what we don't know, the power behind a mashal enables us to completely change our understanding of something. For example, if a person has a metaphor in life that says, you know what? Life is a battle. One long battle. Is it possible that that mashal in their mindset sets the stage for expecting to get hurt, to be wounded, to notice what's wrong? When we look through Michelet this morning, we're going to ask, Shlomo HaMelech, when you wrote Michelet and you added the Yud, you're telling us that these are mashalim, it's a mashal from Hashem. That this is a reflection of what you and I experience in the physical creation that is really a perception of something else. Because the reality that we perceive is not the real reality, it's only the reality we're looking at. But God's reality, Hashem's reality, as reflected in the mashalim, as we're going to see in a few minutes, the metaphors that are drawn very vividly for our minds will enable us to see, is life a battle? Or is life a party? What type of party? Let's look through the words and see if Shlomo HaMelech gives us the life metaphors which should be the banners, the formulas which we live by. Have you ever heard someone say, life is tough? Or life is a test? Well, we know that Mesilat Yesharim tells us it's one long test. It's one test, one long test. Or life is a game, which perhaps suggests we're in for fun, pleasure. Or life is a roller coaster. I find the pace of life just so fast, especially when you're late for a class of 300. But if you're living in the Catskills for 2 months and taking it easy, perhaps I get off the roller coaster and re-energize. Imagine using the metaphor of going to work. I'm going to prison today. And what that does to my mindset about who the boss is, the prison guard, and who the co-workers are, other prisoners. The power of a metaphor, when we take the words from Mishlei and start to unfold the picture that he's drawing, will enable us to get a much stronger idea of what he wanted to convey to us when he told us, guard your mouth. We'll look at the word, guard. I'll give you a simple example. Manus Friedman, Rabbi Manus Friedman, was once in an audience where there was a number of sophisticated women, and one lady who was specifically liberal-minded put her hand up and asked, in a somewhat provocative tone, tell me, Rabbi, why is it that it's always rabbis that are speaking to us? You know, where are all the ladies? What does your wife do? And he was very smart. He said, well, my wife, actually, she runs a house, a home for unwanted children. This woman was very impressed. She was not expecting to hear such a noble endeavor. And Rabbi Manus Friedman said, well, I have to tell you the truth. We have 9 kids and we threw them out into the street and not wanted them, so... The power of a metaphor changes our entire outlook of what we were looking at, and suddenly, these kids that might be described as torture, a metaphor, if I'm running a home for unwanted children, it adds a totally different level of nobility, prestige. I'm shaping the lives of the future generation. Is it possible that in the words of Mishlei, when we look carefully for the description, the vivid description of what the metaphors of life are meant to be in the mindset of a Jew, that we can walk away saying, the metaphors in Mishlei change the way I look at me, my spouse, my children, finances, health, this world, the next. I'll give you another example. When a person said, look, he has a heart of stone. Am I giving them a chance to change? What do you need to break stone? You need a very powerful drill. When we use metaphors, we might be limiting ourselves if we're not choosing carefully enough. I'm going insane. Some people have been saying it for 20 years. But what are we doing to our minds? What are we doing to our cell and our body when we say, you're killing me! But you're not really killing me. See, the power of a metaphor pictures in our mind what we're going through. But it's only our perception. But it may not be the reality. Learning Mishlei this morning, hopefully, will be reconnecting to the reality that Shlomo HaMelech wanted to communicate to mid-age, so to speak. Because what is it about middle age? There are sufficient experiences to call upon in our memories, from the dating and the marriage, raising kids, running a home, raising a family, working in the workplace, building one's career, trying to nurture one's personal growth. So much has already gone under the bridge, so to speak, that with all the life experiences, there are that many more mashalim, metaphors, which Mishlei, Shlomo HaMelech can call upon, and people can say, yes, that relates to me. A broken heart. My heart is broken. What do I do when I say that? If we were to open up our stomachs and take out the heart, we'd see it probably intact. But my heart is broken is a statement of how I feel going through this relationship with this kid, with this spouse, this career, this job that I've now lost and I'm on the line again for employment. When my heart is broken, I'm making a statement of how I perceive the reality now. But is it possible that connecting to God's reality, maybe there's a much bigger picture, and that we should be borrowing from Mishlei life metaphors and dropping vocabulary that was borrowed from a society that we are grateful that they are the host nation, But their vocabulary is not ours. Ours is Lashon HaKodesh. Holiness, sacredness in the language. The metaphors we choose should not come from the streets, the newspapers, the workplace. They should be coming from Das Torah, the mind of the Torah, as reflected through Sifrei HaTorah and Chazal. I never forget, I was once asked, what do you do for a living? And usually that means, you know, how do you earn a buck? So, I don't know why, but I changed the answer and I said, I'm a doorman. The person kind of looked at me and I knew I wouldn't get any on her for that answer. And the truth is, I tutor children. Children who are in special ed, kids who have emotional problems or are very slow in learning. And I call myself a doorman because I'm there to open and close doors. Someone once said they polish diamonds. They're in Kirov. They're taking lost stones, which don't even know they're diamonds, and polishing them till they realized, wait a minute, Kol Yisrael b'nei Melachim. All Jews are princes and princesses. The metaphor we use to describe what we do, who we are, what the purpose of our life is, clicking into that metaphor, connecting to that metaphor, staying with that mashal, can give us a totally different perspective that will make us more aware of how we use our vocabulary to hurt or grow, to blame or take responsibility. So our definition of Mishlei is not proverbs, brilliant sayings of a brilliant mind. That's only a partial description. It's way beyond that. It's relating to every human experience on their level and enabling us to change our minds. And with that, our attitudes, and with that, refashioning what we say, how we feel towards difficult people, and how we're going to forge forward in our Avodas Hashem, Yirat Shemayim, Shemiras Lashon, Shemiras Einayim, watching what goes in our mouth, what goes out, what comes in our eyes, what goes out, what comes in our ears. I'm going to divide this presentation into three parts. The first is a brief overview of Shlomo HaMelech's towering personality and the uniqueness of his reign. The second part of this presentation, which will be the most part, is an analysis of only a few examples from Mishlei with the goal to bring out the metaphor that is vivid, telling, and unfolds the mind to look in a completely wider perspective who I am, what I'm doing here, what am I accomplishing in this particular place where I am, in marriage, in raising kids, in my career. And specifically relating to what practical clarity we get from those mashalim, those proverbs, those sayings that we're going to look at, that will give us a better understanding of the challenges we face in midlife. And lastly, I will end with a beautiful mashal, a beautiful story that I hope will sum up the entire presentation. Let's look at Shlomo HaMelech, his personality and his reign. In one line, what was his mission in life? And the answer is, Shlomo HaMelech's mission was to bring Mashiach in his lifetime. In fact, Sfarim tell us that Shlomo HaMelech was the candidate. He was meant to be the Mashiach. Reb Leib Friedman Hatzal, who the Chazon Ish said of him, he was one of the 36 Lamedot Tzadikim, lived in Bnei Brak, passed away a few years ago, has a sefer in which he, so to speak, defends the mistakes, in quote, inverted commas, of Shlomo HaMelech, when he's criticized by Chazal for having strayed or gone in evil ways or having brought offerings to idol worship in his later life. Has v'shalom on all of those. Chazal tell us openly in Shabbos, in Shabbos, I think it's page 55. You'll forgive me, I'm so used to speaking to audiences who are not always familiar with Hebrew terms, so if I fall into English references, you'll just let me go along. You'll translate it into Hebrew. I think it's page 55, 56 in the Gemara Shabbos. Chazal tell us, Kol ha'omer, anyone who says that Shlomo HaMelech chata, sinned, eino ela toya, is only making a mistake. And in Reb Leib Friedman's Sefer, he explains that the kavana of Shlomo HaMelech in taking 1,000 wives, 300 were real wives, 700 concubines, his intent in marrying more wives than the Torah permitted was in order to prepare the world for Mashiach. Why? By marrying 1,000 wives, he would unite the entire world. Why is that? Because each one of these wives was a princess from another nation. Every royal family on earth had a daughter married to Shlomo HaMelech, to King Solomon. And his mindset was that by uniting the entire world, every royal family will know that their child, the grandchildren, are Jewish. Mechutanim with Shlomo HaMelech. And what was the purpose of that? It wasn't a political stand. This meant that once he was recognized as the greatest mind on earth, the wisest person who ever lived, controlling the greatest power, every nation would be machmir, would subjugate itself to Shlomo HaMelech. It was one of the ingredients in preparation for Mashiach. Ingredient number two, the building of the Beis HaMikdash, completed in his lifetime. Within the first 4 years of his being crowned at the age of 12, by the age of 16, he had built the Beis HaMikdash. Ingredient number three in preparation for Mashiach, the Jewish people lived in peace in their land. Number four, we enjoyed total Torah autonomy and complete supremacy over the entire world. In fact, according to one opinion in the Gemara in Brachas, page Lamed Dalet, the only difference between before and after Mashiach is the subservience to the host nations. Amashmul, Ein Bein Ha'olam Hazeh L'Moyis HaMashiach. There's no difference between what we're used to in normal life in this world and when the Mashiach comes. The only difference is Elas Shibud Malchus Bilvad, the fact that the other nations rule us. But under the reign of Shlomo HaMelech, there was no Shibud Malchus. He reigned in totality. Even though other countries had their own sovereignty and royalty, when they came to Yerushalayim and sat and heard the jewels of wisdom and the unfolding clarity on any question of the mysteries of creation, everyone agreed, going back to their homes, their palaces, their kingdoms, this is the greatest human being, the greatest king that ever lived, with the greatest power. It was the perfect timing for Mashiach to herald the final days of the real Malchus that Shlomo HaMelech was preparing for, which his father had prepared him for, to bring Malchus Shemayim back into the world. The Medrash Rabbah in Esther, Perek Aleph, paragraph 5, states that there were 252 provinces of the civilized world, and Shlomo HaMelech ruled over every single one. This meant that even though they all had their own autonomy, so to speak, if there were any feuds, any disputes, unresolved, go to Shlomo HaMelech, and he would negotiate a perfect resolution. All the preparations for a smooth transition of the arrival of Mashiach, and finally the ultimate Malchus Shemayim in this world. Imagine, I'm only slightly embellishing the words of the Radak in Melachim Aleph, Perek Hei, Pasuk Yud Beis. The Torah tells us, the Pasuk in Melachim tells us, that Shlomo HaMelech gave 3,000 mashalim and 1,005 sayings. Rashi tells us that the mashalim are on every single pasuk in the Torah. The Gemara in Eruvin says it was on every word of the Torah. They gave 3,000 metaphors. Gentiles from the entire world, nobility, royalty, princes, princesses, kings, queens, traveled the oceans and overland, mountains and valleys, to check out the rumors. Were they true? Rumors were circulating around the entire world that there is a city of beauty beyond imagination, Yerushalayim. And in that city, there is a house of God, where everyone who speaks to the one and only Creator walks away answered. And in that city is housed the palace of the greatest, wisest king, most powerful human being that ever lived, Shlomo HaMelech. And there was not a question he did not know how to answer. Imagine such a rumor circulating around the world, and people who had been there came back to their hometowns and said, "We were there. It's real, it's true, it's undescribable." And when you had the most brilliant minds, the best trained kings and princes who had the best tutors and teachings and philosophers to teach them come back from Yerushalayim and say, this king knows everything. The credibility that they carried with that statement meant that there was not a person in the known world who didn't know about this place, this palace, this king. Millions of people traveled to Yerushalayim to check out these rumors and walked away declaring it's absolutely true. And whatever we were told is an exaggeration on the minor scale. It's only a fraction of the truth of how real it really is. And who was this king? Chazal tell us he knew every mystery within creation. His knowledge was so total that he controlled the physical and spiritual worlds. He had control over the Shadim and the Ruchais. He controlled the Olam HaRuchani, the world of spirituality that is the Gairem, the original cause for physical results in this world. In fact, Lashon HaKodesh is so beautiful that the word Ruchni is in Hebrew, comes from the word Ruach, which means wind. Why is the word wind the Shoresh, the root of Ruchnius, spirituality? Because spirituality is a cause that you cannot see. Can you see wind? Can you hear it? You can't see it. You can't hear it. The only reason you know it's there is because you see how the wind acts upon the leaves, the branches, and you hear physical elements reacting, responding to the wind. He had koyach, the power over the ruchnius, the spiritual gairim, the spiritual cause behind everything that was physical. He knew how to tap into that. He was familiar with all the shadim, the negative spiritual forces, and they were totally under his power. He spoke the language of every bird, animal, fish, and insect. He knew the intent and thoughts of every person that sought his counsel. We've heard of such personalities like that as well, such as the Arizal. Shlomo HaMelech had designed a throne so intricate, so sophisticated, that the Zayah tells us in Chelik Beis, Daf Ayin Ches Amud Aleph, that this throne would shake every time a false witness would speak falsely. Shlomo HaMelech would dispatch these spiritual forces, Ruchais, Shadim, and he had them fetch for him water from India. And with that water, he would irrigate Eretz Yisrael in order to grow exotic fruits. Shlomo HaMelech's wisdom was such that he knew that the Evan Shasir, the original place where creation began, and water trickled and provided the oceans, which we know from Yecheskel and also Mishnah and Talmud, that when the third temple will be rebuilt, the Evan Shasir will have a small trickle of water coming out of the Kodesh of Kodashim, the exact place where the Aron HaKodesh with the Luchos is placed. Underneath that is a small stone, the Evan Shasir, just 3 finger breadths high, and a trickle of water, no more than a hair breadth, will come trickling out through the Beis HaMikdash, through the Azara, through the courtyard. By the time it gets out of the courtyard, it's already one tefach, one fistful wide, and the water is going through the Azara. It will eventually go down into all the rivers around Israel, which will eventually lead to the Mediterranean and all the other oceans. And that water will make every sea and ocean drinking water. Shlomo HaMelech knew all the connections under the ground which were originally connected to the Evan Shasir, and knew exactly which plants, which trees, which fruits, which vegetables would grow where. Shlomo HaMelech gave daily classes on every aspect of wisdom, Torah wisdom, the wisdom of the world, and he was able to explain any concept in so many thousands of metaphors. There wasn't a single person, male or female, child or slow learner, that wouldn't be able to grasp the message, the communication, the lesson. Vaydavish Lershis Alafim Mashal, he spoke 3,000 Mashalim, Vayishiroi Chamisha Ve'elef, and he sang 1,005. What happened to them all? Where are they? On every Pasuk? The Pasuk says, Vaydavish, he spoke. They weren't written down. Some of what we have in Mishlei, we have 914 formulas, metaphors. But that doesn't account for 3,000 on every Pasuk, every verse. And according to Rashi in Eruvin 21b, 3,000 Mashalim on every word of the Torah. Where did they go? Amazing, the Radak tells us, that the millions of Gentiles that came to Yerushalayim and sat at the feet of Shlomo HaMelech. In fact, the Gemara in Sanhedrin70b tells us that the Gentiles took up residence in and around Yerushalayim and awoke early to attend his daily shiurim. According to Marsha, on that daf of Gemara, it was the Sanhedrin, the Supreme Court, the best minds, the greatest scholars and tzaddikim of our people, awoke early to sit at the feet of Shlomo HaMelech every morning to listen to his wisdom, because his rulings on everything were superior to their understanding of any halachic application. You have thousands upon tens of thousands upon hundreds of thousands of people hearing his information, his wisdom, and when the Gentiles went back home, they told these mashalim. Says the Radak, when you hear fairy tales, when you hear parables around the world, they originate from Shlomo HaMelech. It's not the time here, but I will even tell you Aesop's fables. There's one famous one called The Fox and the Grapevine. It's a Medrash Rabbah in the name of Shlomo HaMelech. Only preceding Aesop, about 1,000 years. If you hear a brilliant mashal circulating around the world with a beautiful lesson, it probably came out of the mouth of Shlomo HaMelech. But most of them are lost to us. But is it any wonder that the Mishnas Eliezer in Perek Ches tells us that under Shlomo HaMelech's rulership, he supervised the conversion of over 150,000 converts in his lifetime. Now, I made a calculation that between the age of 12, when he ascended the throne, until he passed away at the age of 52, that would approximately be 10 converts a day for 40 years. Now, this appears to be somewhat contradictory, because you will recall that Chazal tell us, it's a Gemara in Avodah Zarah 3b, that in the time of David HaMelech and in the reign of Shlomo HaMelech, no converts were allowed. Because the majesty, the glory of the Jewish people was at its supreme, that anyone who wanted to convert was automatically suspected of doing so. You want to join the club, you want to be part of the winning team. And that's not sincere conversion. So how do we understand that he converted 150,000 people, personally supervised their conversion, and that's the answer? Shlomo HaMelech, who could read their true intent, their true mindset, understood that under the water of the mikveh, the most important part of the conversion takes place, which is a commitment, Kabbalas Ol Malchut Shemayim and Kabbalas Ol HaMitzvos. And he was able to tell from reading the mind of that person if they were true, if they were for real. Shlomo HaMelech, in his name, Shlomo, we see what he's really about. Shlomo, we know, has in it the word ma, which means what. Understanding the what, the empirical knowledge, the information that gives us the founding understanding of the world, is only the beginning. But he went beyond that and understood the lama. That when he understood the why, and it's a different type of lama to the regular madua, lama means to understand its purpose. Lama, to what is this purposeful? He not understood ma, he not only understood when he looked at experiences and took from it a metaphor to how to be an Eved Hashem, how to be more careful in marriage, and he had a lot of experience with 1,000 marriages, how to raise children, and he probably had many of those too, how to handle difficult people in the daily judgments that came before him, how to maneuver political situations to favor everybody without ill intent, without self-serving agendas. Ma! He first had the ability to see what is it in front of me and look at it in the full picture of reality as is humanly possible, and then see, lema, to what purpose is this? And that brought him eventually to shelema, completion. Shelema, Shlomo, comes from the word shalem, which means complete, and is also the root of shalom, peace. Because real peace, real shalom, is when on a personal basis a person feels complete with themselves. If I'm happy in my marriage, but I'm doing a terrible job with my kids, am I going to be b'shalom? And if I'm happy in a marriage and I'm doing great with the kids, but my finances don't talk about, am I going to be b'shalom with myself? And if I am b'shalom in all those three, but I'm not b'shalom with extended family, or I don't have job satisfaction, or I'm not getting on with my in-laws, is it possible that I will not feel b'shalom shalem? Shlomo HaMelech had the unique ability that because he could see so much more than we were willing to see, and he created thousands of metaphors that enabled him to understand beyond what he saw, that it brought him to the Lama and the Shlema, which brought him personal shalom. And what was the root cause of his personality? I'll round off this first part of the presentation. We're going to get into actually some of the Mishalim and Mishle. The root cause of his personality, the answer to that question is provided by Chazal in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Ayin Amud Beis. And it's an incredible answer. It was the heartfelt tefillahs of his mother, Bat Sheva. Her actual Lashon Den, I'm quoting, Kol Nashim Shel Beis Avicha, all the wives, all of them, of your father's home. And she was talking to Shlomo HaMelech. Noidos, all 18 wives of David HaMelech, they made vows. They promised themselves all types of promises of how they're going to grow, how they're going to be careful with Lashon Hara, how they're going to be careful in their relationships. Why? What did they want in return? Yeheli ben hagun lemalchus. Please, Hashem, I'll make all types of vows, but give me a child from David HaMelech who will be candidate for the king after him. That was their agenda. It's not a bad one. But that wasn't the agenda of Bat Sheva. V'ani nadati, I also vowed, I made promises to Hashem, v'amati, and I spoke words of tefillah. Yeheli ben zariz umemula v'tayra, I want a child that will be zariz and mula, filled, saturated with Torah, v'hagun, and a candidate, not for Malchus, that's not interesting to me, l'nevuah, prophecy. The caliber of a Navi, of a Jewish prophet, is someone who has divested themselves of all negias. That their personal awareness is so strong, their clarity of what they're thinking and what they're saying, their choice of words and their behavior is so carefully monitored, that that becomes their training for communication with Hashem. I want a child who will have the ultimate relationship of intimacy with their Creator. And that was the tshuka, that was the gaguyim, those were the yearnings, the heartfelt tefillahs of Bat Sheva. Before he was born, these were her words. Says the Marasha, what was her request when she said, I want a child that will be Zariz? Says the Marasha, Zariz means she davened that he would have a quick mind, a pure and clear mind that would enable him to grasp Torah immediately and master the entire Torah. Because that's the beginning in the ladder to personal growth and perfection. We see from Siddur Sharim that the entire ladder of Zehirus and Zerizus begins with Torah, maybe the day Zehirus. It's Torah, knowing what Hashem wants us to think, speak, and act, which is the genesis of becoming Zahir, clear in noticing my behavior, my speech, my thoughts. So now we know this is who we're dealing with. Let's look at the power of some of his metaphors. Mishle, Chaf Aleph, Pasuk, Chaf Gimel. Shoyne piv, v'lashaynai. Be a guard to one's mouth and one's tongue. Shoyme, mitzaras nafshoy. He's going to be guarding himself from suffering. Look carefully. When you walk down Madison Avenue, I don't suggest you do, but if you know anyone who does, what will you notice outside many doors of prestigious buildings? There's a doorman. If the contents of that building is extremely valuable, what will that doorman look like? If you look at a shomer in front of Buckingham Palace, what will he look like? If you see a shomer in front of Fort Knox, what will he look like? In the time of Shlomo HaMelech, when they use the word shomer, what picture parachuted into the mind of what they've already seen? A guard, probably in uniform, armed, trained, ready, already suspecting the unexpected. That's a shomer. He's not sitting lazily, waiting for the end of his rotation. He's expecting any moment there could be trouble. Shomer piv, stand like a soldier, like a guard, be armed, wear the uniform, picture oneself in front of a gaping mouth, which is almost defenseless, because it moves so quickly before thinking. And says Shlomo HaMelech, shomer piv, a person should be a guard to his mouth, and stand at attention. Any moment someone might drop off an unidentified package of Lashon Hara, of food which is not healthy, of a sharp statement about oneself, don't let it in, and if you do, expel it fast. And if that sharp statement requires some analysis, don't let it into the palace of my mind straight away. First check out who he is. Don't let him into the king's chamber, into the palace of my mind. Shomer piv, guarding one's mouth, is guarding himself from sorrows. How do you say sorrow in Hebrew? Sorrow. I wonder where that word came from. Sorrows means adversity, challenges, difficult kid, difficult spouse, difficult boss, non-easy co-worker, not satisfied with my lot in life, not happy about my finances, not happy about my health. Comes along Shlomo HaMelech and says, I can turn a lot of things around in my life when I take upon myself the identity, I'm a vigilant guard. I'm wearing a uniform because a uniform tells me my duty, by definition. And when things come into my mouth, I check whether it belongs inside or not. Rambam, in Hilchos Deos, for the sake of time, I'll quote it briefly, quotes this pasuk from Mishlei in Hilchos Deos, in Perek Dalet, where he's describing 23 directives of healthy living. And the one he harps on the most, and claims that this one directive alone will be part of a 3-point directive in guaranteeing health all one's life. And that directive is under eating. Under eating, and he attaches it to this verse, Shomer Piv. Under eating, says Rambam, that alone will be sufficient to help guarantee longevity, long life. His words are, Kozman sha'adam itamel v'yagia harbe, all the time that person exercises, he works hard with his body. V'ein oisaveya, does not reach satiation, undereats, umeyav rafin, and has easy bowel movement. Ein cholipa alav, no illness will come upon him. V'koichei mitchazek, his strength will not decrease in mid-age. His metabolism will get stronger. V'afilu oichel ma'achol asasurek, al-hamayim, even if he eats unhealthy food. This is totally opposite to the way the media would have us believe. That eating healthy equals being healthy. Says Rambam, pay more attention to how one eats than what one eats. Because under eating unhealthy food is better than overeating healthy food. You never heard that in any diet. Because it won't sell. The kol mishu yoshev levetach ve'enu mitamel. I'm reading this out because this is midlife strategies, and he's attaching it right at the end. He attaches it to this word, this marshal. Shomer piv, be a god. The kol mishu yoshev levetach, someone who sits without movement ve'enu mitamel, is not exerting his body. Or mishu memashin nekavav, or refrains from relieving themselves. Or mishu shmeav kashin, or does not have good bowel movement. Even if they eat healthy foods, good foods, and guard himself, according to the directives of healthy healing, his entire days will be pain after pain after pain, and his strength will wane, will decrease. Overeating is equivalent to poison for the body. It's the main root cause of all illnesses. The majority of illnesses that come upon people, it's either because of unhealthy eating or because the majority of illnesses that come upon people, Einam Ela Mipnei Ma'achalim Rayim, it's either because of unhealthy eating, or because Shumimale Pitnai, he fills his stomach with Oichel Achila Gasa and overeats. Afilu Ma'achalim Toivim, even if he's overeating healthy food. And this is summed up in what Shlomo HaMelech said in his wisdom. Shomer Piv, God the mouth, the Lashonai, and tongue, Shomer Mitzaras Nafshai, he's guarding himself, not today, he's guarding himself tomorrow. Eating healthy today is a choice to be healthy tomorrow. Eating healthy consistently, under-eating consistently, is a choice, not in how I will feel after I haven't filled my stomach with more energy than I had I filled it. It's a choice to enjoy longevity, long life. Mitzaras Nafshai. Klaimah, and he explains, Shomer Piv, being a god to one's mouth, Melechol Machol Ra, from eating unhealthy, Oyim L'Svaya, or from satiation, V'Lashonai, and his tongue, M'Ledaber, from speaking, Ela Tzlachav, only what's really needed. Making every effort in midlife to notice the verbal mistakes or crimes or violations that I did. How many speeding tickets I should have got for speaking too fast to my spouse, my children, extended family, parents. Making every effort in midlife to notice those experiences and say, from now on, I'm going to be that God and I'm going to be armed. And make the next 20, 30, 40 years one of getting a PhD in apology, saying sorry. A PhD in the results of being careful of guarding one's mouth. And I'll even put it to you, what happens if a person spent the first 30, 40 years easy to anger, easy to criticize, easy to find fault, and decides, I'm going to be an armed guard for my mouth from now on. And there's lots of ups and downs. It doesn't always go consistently up. But week by week, day by day, month by month, over the years, improves. Let's say it takes 10, 20, 30 years to become consistently careful in our eating habits, of what goes in, and what we say to our spouse and children, what comes out. In the last 10, 15, 20 years of our lives, which memories do you think will be most outstanding in the minds of our children when we pass on? The first 40 years of how much we hurt them, or the last 15, 20 years of healing, being careful, and switching around, showing a piv to giving, verbal appreciation, understanding, empathy, loving statements to those closest to us? Is it possible that we can create a healing even if we're starting late? I'll quote for you, because in Perek Lamed Beis of Kiddush Shulchan Aruch, he also quotes this pasuk, Shomer Piv, and he talks about the power of chewing. Watch your mouth! Shomer Piv! Guard your mouth! Don't let it go down in big chunks. Drink your solid food. And Kiddush Shulchan Aruch, in Perek Lamed Beis, I think it's in Halacha Tesvav, says, chewing your food to the point of liquid has three incredible benefits. Number one, your tongue and taste buds enjoy the food for longer. You actually enjoy the food longer. Number two, you feel satiated about one third sooner. Why is that? Because when I'm eating fast, and that last taste of that last cookie that I promised would be the last was unusually outstanding, and my brain is asked, is there room for more? And the brain asks the stomach, who is very honest, as is the rest of the integrity of all my body, and says, well, we're not full yet because we haven't finished digesting what's coming down. And before he managed to say, but I will be filled soon, the brain got the message back, I'm not full yet. And so ate some more. By chewing one's food to liquid, shomer piv, you enjoy the food for which the purpose was to have pleasure. And in that pleasure, it's forbidden to enjoy this world without a bracha. The bracha will be that more meaningful. Thank you, Hashem. Delicious, delicious cookie. This fruit, this orange, this beautiful specimen of a simple segment of orange, which when carefully broken off, can come apart without getting my fingers wet. And as Rabbi Victor Miller says so beautifully, is filled with thousands of little capsules of juicy orange juice that sprinkle all over the mouth when you crush that segment. And by eating and chewing to the point of liquid, Michelet is really telling us, chew and chew to liquid, enjoy the food longer, reach satiation sooner, and you'll enjoy it. And at number three benefit, you're not taxing your digestion nearly as much. A person will live longer. There was once a centurion, a person who reached 100 years old, who when asked, what's the secret of your longevity? Answered, take care of your stomach the first 50 years, and your stomach will take care of you the next. Eating less saves time, money, health. Mishle, Perek Gimel, Pasuk Teslayim. Darkecha, Darkei Noyam. Hashem, your ways are beautiful. So pleasant. So pleasant. The whole Nativ Yisrael. Every single one of the small pathways, whichever direction you go in, if it's in the Torah highway, Shalom will always lead to peace. This is an amazing verse. If this is a metaphor to tell me that all your pathways are peaceful, Darkecha Darkei Noam, all your highways are pleasant, if I'm not enjoying life, I have to switch metaphors. I've got the wrong metaphor. I heard from the grandson of Reb Moshe Feinstein, and it's been printed many times. Reb Moshe Feinstein Atzal asked the question, how is it that the generation that arrived in America at the turn of the century gave their life for Shabbos? Every Friday, you're fired. If you don't turn up tomorrow morning, don't turn up on Monday. How many thousands of Jewish parents were Moser Nefesh for the mitzvah of Shabbos, and their children became Mechalei Shabbos, desecrated. After Moshe Feinstein, every mitzvah which was ever done with Mesiras Nefesh, with such effort that a person had to make serious sacrifices, that mitzvah always stayed. Why didn't Shabbos remain loyal to the children of the parents who were loyal to Shabbos? And he answered, because Darkecha Darkei Noam. If Hashem doesn't want me to have employment Monday, and it's because of Shabbos, it cannot be bad. And when the parents came home on Friday night, and the children heard Daddy say, oh, Shabbos, it's so hard. And they gave a crux. And they groaned. And the children saw, you know why my neighbors have a baseball bat and ball and glove? You know why they're collecting cards and we're not? You know why my neighbors bought a car? You know why they moved out into a bigger apartment? Because my dad keeps Shabbos and keeps losing his job. And Shabbos became associated to pain. Darkecha Darkei Noam. If I'm not experiencing the way I'm doing the mitzvahs, and it's not Noam, it's because either the mitzvah is not working properly the way I'm keeping it, or maybe it doesn't properly apply in my circumstance. I have to investigate that. Because Darkecha Darkei Noam v'chol Nitiv Yisrael, all your pathways should lead to Shalom. When we daven, davening with joy. When we daven, when we learn, davening with simcha. When we prepare for Shabbos, how calm or uncalm we are. Being happy that we only eat kosher, and it's not an apology to our child when they want something and say, I'm sorry, it's not kosher. No, it's not kosher! With a smile. Mishle 27:1, Perek Chaf Zayin, Pasuk Aleph. Al tehalel b'yayim macha. Don't praise tomorrow! Ki lo yiteda ma yalad yayim. Because you don't know what's going to be born in the day. What does that mean? Don't praise tomorrow because you don't know what's going to happen. The day tomorrow that I keep saying, you know what, when I get through my exams, I'm going to be so happy. You know what, when I get engaged, I'm going to be so happy. You know, when I get rid of this date, I'm going to be so happy. When I get married, I'm going to be so happy. You know, when I get divorced, I'm going to be so happy. You know, when I have children, I'll be so happy. You know, when I get a kid out of the house, I'll be so happy. Wait a minute. If my happiness is attached to tomorrow,
Who controls my happiness? If my happiness is outside of me, if what I'm praising is not something that's taking place in my life now, I'm attaching it to when I get out of this job, when I get a better boss, when I'm independent, when I'm appreciated, then I'll be happy. Who am I giving responsibility to my happiness? I'm giving it outside of myself. Rabbi Pliskin once gave a beautiful analogy of a piece of technology, which I don't think we're that far away from, of a small piece of metal, digitally controlled, wirelessly connected to my brain. And on this small little machine, there are two buttons. One is an H button, happiness. And the other is D button, depression. And if I put my finger on the happiness button, all the memories of everything that's good in my life and that has been good in my life, every pleasure that a person's ever had, starts pouring in. All the compliments and the virtues. All the times we enjoyed Shabbos and the children pour into one's mind and it's ecstatic! It's so good! And you put the finger on the D button and you feel life is hopeless. There's nothing worth living for. I can't continue anymore. Whew. Excuse me, would you give this to your mother-in-law? How about your husband? Your children? Go on, touch it. Wrong button! Don't praise tomorrow. Don't give away the opportunity to notice what's born today. You don't know what's already being born. That already exists. Adam Yeshle Mana. A person has 100 Roit Semataim, wants 200. And guess what happens when he gets 200? Wants 400. Wait a minute. Where's the logic that dictates that, you know what, if only I had another 100, then I really would be happy? Wait a minute. If I'm not enjoying the first 100, where's the logic that dictates when I get another 100, then I'll be happy? Says Shlomo HaMelech, if I'm pinning praise of tomorrow, where's my focus? Where am I living? Which time zone? The present? Past or future? The future. Does the future ever exist? It never exists. Think about it. The future never exists, because since we're right, that's the present. And if my mind is in the past, does the past exist? It never exists. It's always history. A second later, it's history. The only use of going into the past is to figure out where to take the lessons for the future. But any other reason to analyze for a few decades is not necessarily going to get me propelled forward unless I'm analyzing my past to understand where to go. So where's the only time zone that my mind is in reality? In the now. Says Shlomo HaMelech, if I'm going to praise tomorrow, I'm going to miss out on everything that's happening now, the good that already exists. In the frightening Torahs, in Parashas Ki Tavo, Perek Chav Zayin, in Devarim, what does the Torah identify as the root cause for all the tzaras that are prophesied? Tachas! Asher lo yavadata et Hashem Elokecha, because we didn't serve Hashem besimcha, with happiness, uvetoiv levav. We'll see that in a moment. With a good heart. Merayv koil! From the abundant good. And what does Rashi tell us? Merayv koil? Be'oi shahaya loy koltov! While he had the good, and he wasn't enjoying it, he missed out on the now. If I'm not enjoying what's good in my life till now, and what's good in it now, and I'm focusing on what hasn't been good, and what has to be good in the future, I'm not enjoying the now. I'm not training myself in happiness. Happiness is noticing what's already good. There's a cute phrase, the past is history, the future is a mystery. But today is a gift. And that's why they call it the present. There is no more important moment than the now. And Shlomo HaMelech is telling me a simple metaphor. Tomorrow doesn't exist. Don't live there. Live and enjoy the now. Mishlei Tesvav. Pasuk Tesvav. Kol Yemei Ha'ani. All, not some, all the days of the poor person. Ra'im. Bad. Terrible. Not Ra. Ra'im. Plural terrible. But a good heart is constantly at a banquet, at a party. This is very powerful. Because do you know someone who's poor and they don't have one good day in their life? Can't be. There's no such thing. But Shlomo Melech's second part of the verse reveals what he's talking about. Kol Yimei Ani, all the days of the poor person are bad. V'lev Tov, Tov Lev. Oh, you're talking about a mind that is attached to what's good. Mishneh Tamid, is it a constant banquet? We're not talking about Anias materially. We're talking about Anias Badas. That if a mind hasn't got beautiful pictures hung on the walls of the palaces in our mind, if I don't put up beautiful metaphors of what life is, if life is a battle, life is a war, guilt a torture, work is a prison, I'm only slightly exaggerating, I know it doesn't apply to anyone here, but some of you have friends who know what I'm talking about. What's going on here is that Shlomo Melech reveals for us, Toiv Lev Mishneh Tamid. Rabbi Victor Miller goes to town on Toiv Lev. Lev is a metaphor. It translates at heart, and of course the heart denotes the seat of emotions, but Lev is constantly the description of thought. Bechol Levavcha. How do you love Hashem with all your heart? Bechol Levavcha is with all your thoughts. That's what it means. Lev Tov means good thoughts. There's a mitzvah, and it's counted 1 of 613 by the smug, the Moshe Makusi, one of the Balei Tosfos. I think it's number 17 in the Asays. He says there's a mitzvah to be done on a Kosh Baruch Hu. The Hashem has a track record of never making a mistake. All accidents happen on purpose. The very word mikra, which again, Christian translation, think about it carefully. If by definition there cannot be an accident because Hashem calculates everything, that means there couldn't be a word in Lashon HaKodesh for something that doesn't exist. Because Lashon HaKodesh describes reality. There's no word in Hebrew for accident. What about mikra? Mikra means called out. Kuf Resh is a two-letter root for calling out. It was called out. Accidents is a term that we've borrowed from our surroundings. But our answer to accidents is Hashgacha Pratis. We mourn, Chas V'Shalom, if it's a tragedy. We respond and we're more careful with seatbelts. We mourn and we're more careful with cholesterol. But the bottom line is Hashem controls the world. Kol Yimei Ani, all the days of the poor person in his mind. If he's not enjoying life, it's not a party. But for someone who's enjoying life, it's one big party. Is that the Jewish view of living? Prepare yourself in the reception hall in order to enter the banquet hall. The real party is in Olam Haba. But this is the reception. It's still a mishteh. I never forget the first time I came to America 13 years ago and we were invited to an American wedding. Now, for just to be honest with you, European standards, I don't know if they've changed much since then, but we weren't used to smorgasbords. So when I came to smorgasbord, I'd never seen such a big wedding in my life. And it was a bit weird to me that from people were eating standing and there was no wash basin, no food, no bread, but you know, this is it. So I was enjoying it and I felt very full until they opened up these doors and there was a banquet hall. I thought, oh my gosh, the party's just begun! Toiv Lev Mishneh Tamid means, think about it. Shlomo HaMelech wants us to vividly describe an experience we've already had and transfer it onto what he's communicating to us. We've all had the experience of a party. Think of the most lavish, enjoyable, pleasurable party you've ever been to. And think of the ingredients that make up that party. The music, conversation, companionship, the people that are there, everyone's dressed in their best clothes, delicious food, favorite drinks, dancing, everyone sharing in this simcha. Ouch! Cut the little finger. When you were drinking a glass of champagne and it's bleeding, nothing serious! A band-aid will be enough. But it's throbbing. You know that experience? It's throbbing. And I have a choice. Is this cut in my finger going to steal from the overall joy? Or will the dancing, the music, the conversation, the simcha for the chasm, the color, whichever simcha it is, best clothes, delicious food, wonderful music, will the overall joy drown the cut finger? Says Shlomo Melech, Toiv Lev Mishtei Tamid. Every night, another bar mitzvah, another wedding. I don't know if you can handle that, but his point is, if life's metaphor is that the whole of life is one long party, how am I supposed to regard the cuts and bruises along the way? And the answer is, whatever's going wrong in our lives is never as much as what could go wrong in our lives. And that when we get out of our crutches and re-appreciate our legs, when we come out of the operating theatre and we're told it was a successful heart transplant, and we breathe the air again and say, Todah Hashem, do we need to lose or almost lose a limb or an organ to appreciate health? Rav Shimon Schwab at Tzal, in his later years, about for a decade he was crippled. And when asked by his grandson, Nosson, how is it, Grandpa? The grandma never saw you complain once that you're immobile. You have no use of your legs. And he said, I look at life in the following way. And he gave a metaphor. Imagine you were given $1 million. And 70 years later, the one who gifted it asked for $100 back. $1,000 back. Would you be bitter? Resentful? Angry? I don't have my legs. But look at my true assets! I'm alive. What's that worth? Married. Over 30 grandchildren going in the Derech Hashem, the same footsteps as my grandparents. What's that worth? For over half a century, leader of the community in Washington Heights. Look at my true assets. The loss of my legs hasn't dented the account. It's a small scratch on my finger. It's an inconvenience. Inconvenience to be crippled? And the answer is, I don't think he made a one-time decision to be happy. It was many times over a lifetime to look back on the thousands of chassadim, but Kotub said Rashi, all the while I had it good. That was a time to train in simcha. In fact, in Hebrew, the Ben Shai quotes the Arizal, says, what is the word in Hebrew for thought, for attitude? Machshava. Machshava is spelt Machshava. Interesting, it shares the same letters as the Simcha. Besimcha is the same oisius, the same letters. Because happiness, besimcha is in the state of happiness. Besimcha, in the state of happiness, is an attitude. It's what thoughts we choose to paint the walls of our mind. In the last 15 minutes, I see you're all still awake. Congratulations. I'm going to share with you the last one. And this is incredible. You go through the entire Talmud, and once they ask a most amazing question. Is a parasha katana? If you could take out one line from the Torah, anywhere in the Torah, is a parasha katana, shekol gufei ha-Torah teluyin ba. If you could select one line that the entire spectrum of Yiddishkeit, everything in the Torah, the whole essence, gufei ha-Torah teluyin ba, is suspended on this one line is holding up everything. Which verse would we select? I think if we had Moshe Rabbeinu here, we'd ask him, Moshe Rabbeinu, which pasuk has the whole Torah hanging on it? My guess is, I have it here. Dvarim, Perek Yud, Pasuk Yud Beis. Ve'ata Yisrael, and now, Jewish people. Ma Hashem Elokecha Shor Mimach. What does Hashem want from you? Ki im le'yiras Hashem Elokecha, but to fear Hashem. La'lechet b'chol drachot, go in all his ways. La'avay say, and to love him. To serve him with all your thoughts, with all your life. So important is this line. Mesilas Yesharim, the Ramchal, identifies this as the foundation of the Brisa of the Pinchas Ben Yair, upon which the entire Mesilas Yesharim is a commentary to this one line. And yet, the Gemara does not answer this pasuk. Eiza parasha katana, which one? I imagine if we asked Rabbi Kiva, he'd say, hey, Vayikra, you test. Ve'ahavta recha kamecha, ze klal gal m'tara. Surely that's it. All the rest is commentary. And yet the Gemara doesn't answer Rabbi Kiva's answer. Which one? If we ask David HaMelech, I think he might answer, Hoidu Hashem. Be grateful to Hashem. Thank Him. Ki toiv, because God is only good. Ki le'olam chasdei. His kindness is unlimited. And that's not the answer given. What is the answer? Answers the Gemara in Brachos, Daf Samach Gimel, Amud Beis. Amud Aleph, sorry. Page 63a. Eizah parasha katana shekol gufi atar tuluyim ba. V'chol derachecha de'ehu. Mishlei, Parak Gimel. Pasuk Vav. V'chol derachecha, in all your ways de'ehu. Acknowledge Hashem. V'hu yasha urchasecha. That will straighten out any route, any path which is bent in my life. Acknowledge Hashem in all your ways. And Chazal opened this up incredibly. It has halachic ramifications. There's an entire siman, an entire chapter in Shulchan Aruch dedicated to this one line. V'chol derachecha de'ehu. Acknowledge Hashem in kol derachecha, all your ways. Why didn't you say in your ways? In all your ways tells me not only when we are serving Hashem directly with Shabbos and Kashrus and Sneas, Tas Mishpacha, Tfilin, Davening, learning. Not only when we're doing mitzvahs, De'ehu, why else am I doing it if not testifying that Hashem wants me to serve Him now? Bechol Derechecha. Everything that goes in my mouth, everything that comes out that is not needed, use it for Hashem. Bechol Derechecha. Walking. Find a way to make it for Hashem. De'ehu, acknowledge Hashem. Every dava shel reshus, every area of our lives, de'ehu. Buying clothes, de'ehu. Acknowledge Hashem, the sneers. How we wear, how tight, how not tight. Talking to a friend, de'ehu. Giving them pleasure, giving them compliments. It may seem a wasteful conversation, but there's always a way to find a lesson for myself or to help that person. Maybe even just in the way we greet them, de'ehu. Going on the treadmill, de'ehu. I'm going on the treadmill. Hineni mechuvan lechayim mitzvas ase deraisa. Shel v'nishmatim et nafshu seichem ma'id. Guard your health exceedingly. It's a pasuk in the Torah which Rambam quotes. And he says, of the three main directives of health, one of them is daily exercise. Doing it to feel good. Doing it to be healthy. Doing it to serve Hashem in health. Going for a walk with one's children, with one's husband, de'ehu. Family vacation, de'ehu. Don't go on vacation to places if you've got older boys that is not good for their eyes, de'ehu. Acknowledge Hashem. Reading stories with our kids, how we say it, what we say, de'ehu. Even taking time off for ourselves to get off the roller coaster of life, de'ehu. I'm reading this book in order to relax, in order to serve Hashem better. Writing bills twice a month, de'ehu. Says Rabbi Victor Miller, this is the best opportunity to appreciate Parnassah. Write in every memo to Bel Atlantic, to Dal Hashem. Thank you, Hashem, I have the money to pay the bills. This is the moment, the Oyech Shehayalah HaKoltuv. This is the moment when I've got it to enjoy. Thank you, I'm paying my mortgage, I'm paying the rent, I'm paying the lease, I'm paying the tuition. Barely. I don't speak for myself, of course. Behold, derachecha, in all your ways. Ama bar kapara, says bar kapara in the Gemara, afilu d'ava avera. In all your ways, not only in the mitzvah, afilu d'ava avera, even an avera. What do you mean even an avera? Because I'll tell us in Seita, I think it's Daf Gimel, ein adam chayta, ela im kein nichnas b'yuch shtus. A person can't sin against Hashem, with Hashem in his presence. Hashem, we can't spit in a king's face if we know we're in his palace. It's impossible, it's just too dangerous. The only way I can sin is to forget who's there in front of me. So how does Chazal tell us, de'ehu afilu d'var avera? The Sfarim tell us, in the moment of that avera, it's almost impossible, de'ehu, except in very exceptional cases. But a second later, Hashem, I want to re-establish my relationship with you. Sorry, Menu. When she was accused of laughing after she heard the news that she's going to have a child, she's 90 years old. How is it possible? And she laughed. And the Torah records, she laughed. And when she was accused, what was her response? I didn't laugh. How could so deny that she loved.
Says the Kotzker Rebbe, quoting Rambam, in the halachas of Teshuvah, says Rambam, that when I want to make a change in the direction I'm going in, which is what Teshuvah means, to turn direction, get back on track. When I want to make a change, I should include there changing my name. And he says, I don't mean Shinui Hashem Mamash, not literally. It means no longer relating to that person anymore. When Sarah said I didn't laugh, she was saying, a second later I caught myself and realized, why am I laughing? I've been praying for this all my life. And when she was accused, she said, I didn't laugh. That was the old Sarah. I feel that even if a person makes a mistake, start again. When we get up from the tragedies, when we get up from the adversities, the challenges of life, uvkumecha, still love Hashem with all the heart and soul. And I'll show you. Shlomo Melech did not leave us alone. In the words, b'chol derechecha, in all your ways, acknowledge Him, de'ehu, He told us how. How do we acknowledge Hashem in all our ways? Says Shlomo Melech, tefillah, talk to Hashem. Talk to Hashem. When we're eating, when we're drinking, when we're walking on the treadmill, one line tefillah. Help me become healthy. Help me be strong. Thank you for my health. Thank you for my spouse. Thank you for my children. Every time we speak, we are practicing noticing the good. We're reinforcing that picture in our mind, reminding ourselves of which pictures we want to keep on the walls of our mind and which we don't want. Says the Ben Ishchai, you'll see it in the words, Bechol Darachecha. And I promised I'll finish here with a muscle. But let me just finish this last bit. Bechol derechecha. Bechol, in all derechecha, your ways. De'ehu. Know Him. Acknowledge Him. Says the Ben Ishchai, quoting Arizal. Look at the first letters of each of the word. Bechol, bet. Darkecha, daled. De'ehu, daled. Badad. To be alone with Hashem. The last letters. Lamed. Chaf Vav. Chaf Vav is a famous Gematria 26 of UK Vavke, Hashem's name. Lama Chaf Vav, Badad Lashem. Hidden in this line, which Hazal identify, is the Pasha Katana Shakol Gufiya Torah, Teluyim Ba. The entire Torah hangs on this line. Talk to Hashem. Be alone with Hashem. Have intimacy, a relationship with Hashem. It's talking about talking. I'm going to end off. Shlom HaMelech. Loibana Shleimai, he did not build the Beis HaMikdash, Ela Altanai. Only on condition, Shekomi, anyone, Sheyesh Lo Tzara, who has a challenge in life, Yavai will come to my house, Vitpalel Aleh, and pray about it. The purpose of the Beis HaMikdash was that Jews would come and pray there. And the Medrash in Medrash Rabbah, what I just quoted you, by the way, for those taking notes, is in the Masechta Smachos, Perek Vav. The only reason He created the Beis HaMikdash was for people to have a relationship with Hashem, to talk to Hashem and pray. Shmos Rabbah 31:5. Kivin Shabana Shleim Et Abayit Am LaKadosh Baruch Hu B'Tfilasei. When He built the Beis HaMikdash, He said to Hashem, Ribbon HaOlam, Master of the Universe, Im Yesh Adam Shitpalel Lefanecha, if there's anyone who prays before You, Shetiten Loi Mamon, and he asks for money, Ve'ata Yedea Shiraloi, but you know that it will be detrimental to him, Al Titen Loi, don't give it to him. Vim Ra'ito Adam. But if you see someone, Noyeh B'Oishrei, who enjoys, has pleasant relationship with his money, with his wealth, Tenlo, give it to him. Says the Maratz on the Medrash Rabbah there, what's it mean, Noyeh B'Oishrei? If you see that he'll give to poor people, give him money. Answer people's prayers, even the Gentile. I'll end off with the following story. Once upon a time, there was a king. And the king wanted a relationship with his subjects. So he had a brilliant idea. I'll build a special room. It will be part of my palace. And I will invite every subject in my kingdom for a personal audience. And posters will put up across the entire kingdom, inviting everyone, whenever you want, come to the palace of the king for a personal audience. Imagine, the king, he's got all the connections. He has all the power, all the influence, all the money. Any problem? This is the address. And on the first day that he opened up this new idea, this long line of people, and the first person walks in, and the king greets him, both hands, Shalom Aleichem, and the man is very nervous. He said, what's your name? Your Majesty, my name is Yonki.
Yankee, what can I do for you? Tell me, what can I do for you? Well, to tell you the truth, Your Majesty, I'm very humbled the fact that you're giving your time for me, but I have to tell you, I've been laid off my work. I'm a businessman. I had a partner who passed away, and I couldn't carry the business on my own. We fell into debt. Finally, I had to close business, declare bankruptcy. My wife is ill. I have a daughter who needs to be married, and I don't know where to turn. I'm taking care of my wife. She's so ill, I have no means to create a parasa. I was wondering, a king with all his connections and influence, perhaps, you know, maybe a loan or something would help me. Oh, I'm so sorry. Yanke, I didn't realize the time. There's so many people waiting. I'm sort of rushing around, but, you know, good luck on your endeavors to make panasa. Thank you, Your Majesty. And he walks out ashamed. What happened? Here, I pull my heart out and give me this abrupt ending. Before the king calls in the next person, he calls over, hey, Daniel, come over here. Calls one of his servants. Daniel, listen. You see that man? Take some money from my treasury. I want you to go with your wife and children and move to his town. On the way to his town, I want you to pick him up on the road and get into conversation. And after you hear him out, tell him you're going to establish a business and you're looking for a partner to help in that business. Got it? Got it. Good. Next person walks in. Sarala. Oh, how do you do? Your Majesty, thank you for your time. What can I do for you? Well, to be honest, I have a terrible situation. My husband is not a kind man. He's not appreciative. I have a lot of problems with him. I just wanted to, if Your Majesty could speak to him or someone. Oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't realize the time. Please forgive me. There's so many people waiting. You do understand. So, and she walks out very ashamed, humiliated. Meanwhile, he calls over. Gabriel. Gabriel, come on here. You see that lady? I want you to go over to her hometown. Befriend her husband. Talk to him in a nice way. Invite him to your home. Let him see your family. And build a relationship. And between you and your wife, you'll make friends. Maybe you can help build their family and back together again. Got it? Got it. And this goes on and on. This person needs a referral. And after a few minutes, the king gives them a abrupt ending to the audience. And they walk out wondering, the king has all the physicians at his disposal. Couldn't give me one phone, one reference, nothing. There was one hacham that said, you know, this doesn't make sense. People are walking out of there dissatisfied. And there's different rumors going around. Some say, it's all a hoax. The king is just doing it to make believe that he has power and there's no power there. Others say, no, you know what? I have a feeling he's behind events that unfold afterwards. And others say, you know what? I'm not even going to bother going. It's a waste of time. But there's one hacham who says, you know, this makes no sense. How can it be that the king is doing these funny audiences? So he goes along himself. He gets cut off in mid-sentence, walks backwards, but instead of leaving, quickly sneaks behind the couch and listens in on the conversations taking place between the audiences and between the meetings. And he sees, oh, the king is sending his many servants to take care in different ways the problems that are being brought to his attention. And he goes out and he tells people, I want you to know the king is calculating, he knows exactly what he's doing. But you know what? Over the weeks, months and years, less and less people wanted a relationship with the king that they couldn't see was real. Until one day, the king was sitting in his palace alone, and no one came. And he said to himself, I only built this home so I could have a relationship with my people. If they don't come to me, I don't need the home. And he made an arrangement that an enemy, an old, old enemy, would be tipped off that this particular date, there'll be no one guarding the palace, come and destroy it. Because as long as people don't appreciate it, the experience of intimacy with me, I don't need this palace. But I ask you, leave the wall on the western side alone. Because if any time in the future any of my subjects want to remember there was such an intimacy, such a relationship, let them come to that wall. And let them remember what it was like when they used to pray and ask me for requests for health, panasa, marriage, raising kids. And every time someone comes and does a kindness to another subject in my kingdom, every time one of my people is careful not to speak badly against another, I'll count that as a brick. Every time they learn the instructions that I gave them, every time they attempt to have a relationship, every effort I will count as another brick. And when there are enough bricks, I will rebuild my palace and we will be reunited once again. Hashem, of course, is the king, the Hacham,